ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. China says the U.S. provoked a close call between naval ships from the two countries. ABC's Patrick Reeval has more.
The U.S. and China trading warnings after a U.S. destroyer and a Chinese warship came dangerously close in the Taiwan Strait. The near collision in the waters that separate China and Taiwan. The U.S. Indo-Pacific Command confirming that the Chinese naval ship came within 150 yards of the USS Chung Hoon, picking up considerable speed before cutting across its bow and forcing the American ship to slow sharply.
President Biden signed the bipartisan debt agreement that prevents a default. It suspends the debt limit for 2 years. Republican presidential hopefuls were in Iowa Saturday. Former Vice President Mike Pence teased his own entry into the race. Notable name not there, the front runner, former President Donald Trump. Tonight, it's game two of the NBA Finals in Denver on ABC. The Nuggets try to take a 2-0 lead on the Miami Heat. This is ABC News. Officials in India are blaming a signaling system error for switching a train onto the wrong track, and that caused Friday's derailment between two passenger trains that left over 300 people dead and 1,000 hurt. Georgia's most famous crop was nearly wiped out.
The peach crop across Georgia nearly wiped out. A warm winter causing the fruit to develop early, and then a cold snap in March killing the nascent peach buds. The peach crop also thinned in neighboring South Carolina. USDA data showing white peaches going for $3.88 a pound. That's up more than a dollar from last year. Yellow peaches up 50 cents from the year before. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Little more than 5 months after going into cardiac arrest during a Monday night football game, Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin teaching others about the importance of CPR.
Remember, 100 to 120.
Bills hosted the hands-only CPR event, the first stop on what Hamlin says will be a nationwide charity tour, and 50 tackle football teams from the area received AED devices. Brian Clark, ABC News.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dominic Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The Wisconsin legislature is working on a number of bills aimed at addressing the state's worker shortage. As Mike Moen reports, some groups are calling on Governor Evers to veto bills they say would make it harder on people struggling to get by.
Organizations from around the state want the governor to veto a bill that would require Badger Care recipients to renew their health coverage twice as often. Another veto request involves a measure that would limit unemployment benefits. William Park Sutherland of the policy group Kids Forward argues these plans unfairly target people who rely on these forms of assistance. He adds that 7 out of 10 Medicaid recipients are already employed.
And so if state policymakers want to support workers, they need to address the real factors that make it difficult and sometimes impossible for workers to take more hours and to get and keep better jobs.
He says expanding child care access would be a big help. Business groups who support some of these bills say they would be more effective in addressing worker shortages. And GOP legislators point to a non-binding referendum from the April election that saw Wisconsin voters agree with the idea of work requirements for certain public benefits. But skeptics like Park Sutherland point out there are already checks and balances for many public assistance programs. He feels this is an attempt to avoid empowering low-income workers who aren't getting the necessary benefits from their employers.
They don't want to pay their workers fair wages and offer life-saving benefits.
And he adds that most people enrolled in Wisconsin's public assistance programs are white, but restrictions disproportionately affect people of color. In the last legislative session, similar bills were advanced by the Republican-led legislature and were subsequently vetoed by Evers. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Woo-hoo! Starting at 6 AM, The Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Morning Cannolis, and it's also Saturday, June 3rd, 2023. Thank you so much for joining me on this beautiful morning here in Waukesha and throughout the state of Wisconsin. It is a special morning, a special broadcast here on Morning Cannolis. This is our 50th broadcast, the 50th time through the auspices of Civic Media. We've come into your homes, your businesses, your cars, your public areas. Thrilled to be still on the air talking with you about the important news stories of the day. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion of those important events, those important circumstances, those stories in what, in law, in government, and in the aspiration for justice in America. We do this every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 o'clock. Delighted once again to have you with us. And by us, I mean not just me, but also my wonderfully professional and always engaging producer, Anya, who is with me here at the studios of WAUK here in Waukesha. Through Civic Media, in recent weeks and months, we have been broadcasting not only here at WAUK in Waukesha, listening audiences throughout this area, but also to WMDX in Madison, WXCO in Wausau, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WRCE in Richland Center, WLAK in Emory, WISS in Oshkosh, and WGBW in Green Bay, throughout the state of Wisconsin, through Civic Media, bringing you our weekly discussion again about law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. This morning, celebrating our 1 year on the air. Always delighted, as in past weeks, to have your phone calls. Always delighted to take your comments, your questions, your objections, your perspectives on things that we talk about in these areas. That phone number, as you know well, is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. And although this is our 50th special broadcast, a couple of wrinkles, a couple of new things being introduced this morning, which we will talk about. As always, our syllabus this morning is ambitious, but hopefully achievable throughout this hour and next hour. Hopefully also educational and maybe even on occasion inspiring to do important things in our lives and our livelihoods. And we always ask, as we address these questions related to the news stories of our lives, three important questions, three important inquiries. We ask, what happened? What do we know with certainty? Important to focus on the facts, not speculation, but what we know with certainty. Also acknowledging, of course, along the way, when we do not know things, when we are not prepared to discuss those things that are not yet known in the public domain, and lots of what we talk about necessarily involves investigations, both civil and criminal. We don't know a lot of things. Eventually we do, but we adhere to the notion that facts are important and that as a part of one of our first questions, we always ask, what do we know? What do we know for certain? What do we know about the world in which we live? Second, why are those facts important? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to understanding the way in which we live our lives here in the United States, right here in the state of Wisconsin? Why are those things significant to us? Why should we care? And third, what do we do about them? We can't always do something about everything that happens in our lives, and certainly in these areas of government and law and justice. But there are many times in which there can be a response. There can be an appropriate reaction. What do we do in terms of answers to those things, those questions that we raise here on Morning Cannolis this morning? Again, our 50th show, our one-year anniversary, no exception to that past agenda. Also, no exception to soliciting your comments, your questions, calling into us to chat about these important issues. We do have, as always, a very aggressive, a very chock-full syllabus this morning. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to be chatting about this hour and then next. In past broadcasts, we have initiated a new segment called Undiscovered Justice, identifying those times, those circumstances, those events where things have happened sort of under the radar, not on the top headlines of our newspapers and even in our news feeds. A couple of stories this week on this 50th broadcast about property, about territory, about land, real estate. Undiscovered Justice, things going on to promote justice in America. One of them having to do with our indigenous populations and some lands in New Mexico. Another having to do with some properties, some coal properties in West Virginia. We're going to talk about undiscovered justice right at the top of our show this morning in this first hour. Then we're going to talk, of course, as we often do, about matters related to January 6th, matters related to Mar-a-Lago. Lots of stories this past week involving our former vice president, involving our former president, and discussing not only the status, again, of what we know about some of those investigations, some disclosures made just this past week that affect the pursuit of those investigations, or in one case, the decision not to pursue them. Also, big news this past week. And then also talking about a pending case in New York. We've talked about that a lot before, and a judge and an attempt to get him off that case. We're going to chat about that also in this first hour. Then we're going to be initiating a new segment today called Rule of Law in Snapshots. We spend a lot of time talking here on Morning Cannolis about the in-depth issues, the specifics of cases often, specifics of events, why they're relevant to the rule of law. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about four different matters, many of them following up on stories that we have talked about in the past, to talk about four of those in snapshots, not spending a huge amount of time on them, but updating you and describing once again the reason why it's important to remain current on the stories that we have talked about in previous broadcasts. Rule of law in snapshots. And then, as you know well, if you have been listening with us, and I suspect that you have for a long period of time, we're going to be spending a good deal of time, mostly in our second hour, talking about, yes, the United States Supreme Court. We are in that time in the United States of America when our Supreme Court is issuing decisions every single week that are very significant. We have talked about many of those in the past. This past week, a couple of additional Supreme Court decisions that may not be at the top of the list in terms of earth-shaking matters, but significant when it comes to labor, significant when it comes to false claims and prosecutions of those people or those companies that may or may not be making false claims to the government. We're talking about those cases and then recap just a bit some of the cases that we have talked about before in the areas of water pollution and internet liability and intellectual property. All things already decided. Looking forward to spending much of the month of June talking with you about these other major cases that the Supreme Court is going to be issuing almost certainly on several days, many days in this month of June as we go into the 4th of July holiday. This is that time of year when our United States Supreme Court begins to clear its docket, if you will, and finally issues those cases, about 60 different matters pending before the United States Supreme Court in this 2022-2023 term. And yes, they're already beginning to stockpile cases for the next term that begins in October of this year. We won't get to that today. We'll talk about those cases down the road. But today, again, a focus on the Supreme Court, past and present, and those things it's deciding in these moments in our lives. Let's talk first this morning. Let's talk some undiscovered justice, some undiscovered things that are out there, accessible to all of us, some good news, if you will, in terms of the promotion of the rule of law. Let's talk, first of all, about this major event happening this past week involving a Native American cultural site. The administration of President Joseph Biden took some very major action just Friday, to block some new oil and gas leasing opportunities and options on some federal lands that surrounds something called the Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. It's one of the nation's oldest and most culturally significant Native American sites. We know well that for the first time in our history, we have a Native American Interior Secretary, the Department of Interior, headed up by a woman named Deb Haaland, H-A-A-L-A-N-D. And she, once again, the first time we've had an incumbent in that all-important spot who is of Native American heritage. Deb Haaland announced, Secretary Haaland announced this past week that her agency would be withdrawing public lands, taking off the market, if you will, within a 10-mile radius of this Chaco Canyon and the area around it. It's known generally as the Chaco Culture National Historic Park. And she's taking those lands off from access to new oil and gas leasing for, yes, that's right, 20 years, for two decades. And that follows, of course, a pledge that she has made previously, a pledge that this administration has made previously to do just that, protecting this area from drilling, ensuring that future generations, not just of Native Americans, but all of us, have access to this important history about the lands that we now call America, the lands that are still indigenous lands, and in many cases owned by virtue of treaties and by virtue, most importantly, of heritage and history by our Native American populations. The move announced by Secretary Haaland this past week will not affect some existing oil and gas leases on land or drilling on private property within the 10-mile radius, but it does once again carve out this major area, this major Chaco Canyon area. This plan in particular is intended to underscore the government's general commitment to focus on Native American issues and expand, as we have seen in other situations, the conservation of our public lands again for our future generations. A very important thing, a commitment not only that this administration has made, but other administrations of both Republican presidents and Democratic presidents to preserve our lands. Undiscovered justice in many ways. There's no doubt that this particular canyon park, it's an area about 30,000 acres in what is called the High Desert Mesas of northwest New Mexico. It was established way back in 1907. Who was president then? It was President Theodore Roosevelt, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is home to this vast network of pre-Columbian ruins, and that's why this is so very important historically for our nation and the history of those peoples who've lived in this property on this land before the United States was here. Between the 9th and the 13th century, get this, the area was a center of Pueblo culture. It had multiple settlements of multi-story houses, the kinds of things we have seen not only there in the actual site, but also, of course, in images, paintings, renditions of what we believed that civilization looked like in the past. Sacred sites on this property as well. For the past decade or so, Pueblo and some other Native American groups there have worried that the oil and gas projects were threatening the park, threatening the heritage, threatening the legitimacy, the continued legitimacy of all of these kinds of things established way back in 1907, again, attempting to commemorate and to preserve history that goes back long before that. Today marks an important step in fulfilling this administration's commitments to Indian country. That's what the secretary said, protecting Chaco Canyon, the sacred place that holds deep meaning for the indigenous peoples whose ancestors have called this place home since time immemorial. That's what our Secretary of Interior said at the time. Right after the break, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what this administration has also done in this general area. Undiscovered justice this morning on Morning Cannolis to begin our two-hour discussion of the rule of law, government, and the way in which we are placed inside all of these issues here in the United States of America and here in this great state of Wisconsin. Thank you for joining me. Stay with me for this important discussion this hour and next.
Imagine, it's the last ride, but your symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C, are taking you for a ride. What should you do? Keep managing your constipation with belly pain the same old way? Or try getting ahead of your symptoms by talking to your doctor about treating it with Linzess, linaclotide. Linzess is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. It's not a laxative. It's a once-daily pill that helps you get ahead of your symptoms. It's proven to help you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually.
Do not give Linzess to children less than 2. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling.
Imagine, what could relief from IBS-C mean for you? Talk to your doctor and say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Woo-hoo!
Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
We are back this morning on our Morning Cannolis broadcast, talking once again about the rule of law, the administration of justice in America and the state of Wisconsin, and your role, our role, in making all of that work. Beginning our broadcast this morning by a special invocation of our sometimes segment called Undiscovered Justice, and talking about the fact that the administration, the present administration, has banned drilling around this major Native American cultural site called the Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, discussing in particular the reason for doing that, to preserve not only the history of that from the past, but also for the future. A park that was established way back by President Theodore Roosevelt way back in 1907 at the time of the announcement of this ban for 20 years from new oil and gas leasing on this very important place of heritage for our Native American populations. The Bureau of Land Management director, her name is Tracy Stone Manning, said this. She said, "The exceptional landscape in the greater Chaco region has profound cultural importance. Today's announcement, again, this ban on oil and gas leasing in that area, marks an important step in ensuring indigenous voices help inform the management of our public lands." Yes, indeed. A significant thing that our government can and should do to ensure that we all have access to these beautiful sites, these important sites that underscore once again the history of this property, this real estate, this land, which we now call America, which our Native American populations still have claim to by virtue of the fact that many, if not all of them, are sovereign nations inside our nation. We know as well that the Supreme Court has wrestled with this issue of the involvement of our Native American populations historically, the significance of treaties entered into by our Congress, by our former presidents, and the establishment of a sense of inclusion and shared vision among our Native American populations, among all Americans for the future. That advanced significantly this past week by the declaration that at least for 20 years, this particular site in New Mexico will not be spoiled, will be accessible for Native Americans and for all Americans to revel in our history and their history in this important part of our nation. A second story also revolving around land and the involvement of the United States Department of Justice, your government, in preserving it for the future. This one's a little bit more grisly, not quite as celebratory, because it, yes, involves lawyers, it involves courts, and involves fines, the imposition of fines for entities that have not, in fact, preserved our natural resources. Just this past week, the Justice Department, the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, announcing a lawsuit on Wednesday against a major coal empire. Some companies there are seeking $5 million in unpaid civil penalties and fees. The principal defendant in this case, among others, is the son of the present governor. His name is West Virginia Governor Jim Justice. His son runs the family's coal operations, and along with him, there are more than a dozen companies that own and operate these companies in West Virginia. The companies, according to the Justice Department, again, this is an allegation in a civil complaint filed just this past week, repeatedly violated federal laws that oversee coal mine operations. What do they say in particular in this civil complaint filed once again by your government? Said over a five-year period, the defendants in this particular case, again, a civil matter, including the son of the present governor and other defendants involved in the coal companies there, these defendants engaged in over 130 violations of federal law, posing health and safety risks to the public and the environment. That was the statement made by Christopher Kavanaugh, who is the present U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Virginia, appointed by this president, confirmed by the United States Senate. And that's the statement that he made at the time that his office filed in the federal district court, not the state court, the federal court in West Virginia, this major civil action to enforce the environmental laws and to seek the imposition of penalties for the failure to abide by the conditions, the terms of those laws. The U.S. attorney that went on to say, after given notice, these defendants failed to remedy the violations that were identified and were ordered over 50 times to cease mining activities until their violations were abated or reduced, basically. Said today, the filing of this complaint continues the process of holding these parties accountable for jeopardizing the health and the safety of the public and of our environment. Very significant case, once again, under the headlines, if you will, undiscovered justice, significant, plainly. The filing of a civil complaint does not mean that there is the imposition of a judgment yet. That's what trials are all about. That's what pretrial proceedings are all about. That's what the entry of a judgment ultimately would be by a federal district court, whether or not the allegations are sustained, maintained by evidence. By evidence that is credible and reliable in the federal court. But again, this past week, efforts by your government to preserve in West Virginia and in New Mexico these important lands for the future of our nation, our future generations, all of that, undiscovered justice, now discovered justice here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me here in the studios of WAUK and throughout the state of Wisconsin, all of the broadcast areas of Civic Media. Delighted to have you with me and with my producer, Anya. We, as always, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 here on this special 50th broadcast of Morning Cannolis, entering into our second year of broadcasting here on Civic Media, looking very much forward to that. Looking forward to your continued participation, your listening, your involvement in our discussion about the rule of law, justice in America, and the pursuit of the ways in which we can all become involved in our government to make our nation, our state, better places in which to live, in which to work, in which to raise families, and to reside generally. Let's move on, as we always do, to some significant issues, some significant developments in the rule of law in the area of justice this past week. Again, some of these, if not all of these issues, involving the United States Department of Justice and its investigations involving both the former president, the current president, and a former vice president. Let's begin with that story. We know well that since the summer of last year, actually even before then, the United States Department of Justice has been looking at whether or not the former president, Donald Trump, was involved in taking documents from the White House, arguably some classified documents as well, contrary to law. When we come back, we're going to tell you more about that and the updates not only to that individual investigation, but a significant matter involving the status of the current investigation of the present president, Joe Biden, and most significantly, the big news of this past week, a decision by the Department of Justice about whether to continue a similar investigation of Mike Pence, our former vice president, again, involving allegations of the acquisition, the taking, the maintenance of documents. Stay with us for that important news here on Morning Cannolis.
This
summer. 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Starting at 6 AM, the Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show.
On WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. China says the U.S. provoked a close call between naval ships from the two countries. ABC's Patrick Reeval has more.
The U.S. and China trading warnings after a U.S. destroyer and a Chinese warship came dangerously close in the Taiwan Strait. The near collision in the waters that separate China and Taiwan. The U.S. Indo-Pacific Command confirming that the Chinese naval ship came within 150 yards of the USS Chung Hoon, picking up considerable speed before cutting across its bow and forcing the American ship to slow sharply.
President Biden signed the bipartisan debt agreement that prevents a default. It suspends the debt limit for 2 years. Republican presidential hopefuls were in Iowa Saturday. Former Vice President Mike Pence teased his own entry into the race. Notable name not there, the front runner, former President Donald Trump. Tonight, it's game two of the NBA Finals in Denver on ABC. The Nuggets try to take a 2-0 lead on the Miami Heat. This is ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
At Lakeland Care, we build better lives. Located right here in northeastern Wisconsin, our staff lives and works in the areas we serve. Offering public and private care management options, we have a strong track record of success in helping members of our community live their happiest, healthiest, and most independent lives. Beyond care management, we now offer consulting, coaching, and training for individuals and organizations. Where you need us, when you need us, we're on your team. Visit LakelandCareInc.com. To learn more.
It's time to have some fun and make a difference, Waukesha County. Attend the 2023 Habitat for Humanity of Waukesha Dream Builders Gala on June 9th at 6 p.m. in the Domenica Park neighborhood. Help celebrate the accomplishments of last year while helping to create, preserve, and promote affordable housing in our area. Enjoy an upscale barbecue, live entertainment, and the chance to make a real difference in the lives of local families. Register now at HabitatWaukesha.org/events. That's HabitatWaukesha.org/events. Let's build a brighter future together.
This summer,
1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Woo-hoo! Starting at 6 AM, the Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at SoundItOutTogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Delighted to have you with me here on this beautiful morning here in the state of Wisconsin, Saturday, January 3rd, 2003, as a part of our regular Saturday morning review of the significant stories, events, circumstances, stories out there in connection with the rule of law, justice and the administration of justice in America, talking right now about major news involving our former Vice President Mike Pence, and backing into that story by providing once again the background to it. Right before the break, talking about the fact that the U.S. Department of Justice has for a number of months, coming up on almost a year, if not longer, been reviewing, determining whether or not there is any basis for charging people, perhaps including our former president, with violations of law related to the taking, the acquisition, the maintenance, maybe even the use, the demonstration, the sharing of classified and other documents at his location in Mar-a-Lago, maybe other places as well. That investigation continues to go on under the auspices, the oversight, the supervision of Jack Smith, who is the special counsel appointed, again, the federal government in our U.S. Department of Justice by the Attorney General Merrick Garland. He continues to pursue that particular matter as to the former president, and there's a second matter also involving a current president. His name, of course, is Joseph Biden. In the wake of the appointment of Jack Smith by the Attorney General to investigate, to determine whether or not there's a basis for any charges on the so-called Mar-a-Lago documents case with respect to the former president, the Attorney General then, upon the identification of like documents, perhaps not specifically the same number in numbers or in content and quality, but the discovery by our current president that while he was not in office, after the time that he was the vice president, he had both at his home in Delaware and at an office in Washington, D.C., some materials that also should not have been in his possession, his acquisition there in the wake of his leaving office. And unlike the former president, the current president cooperated fully in identifying those documents, inviting the FBI in to take a look at what he has had, searching those properties to determine whether or not there are any documents that he should not have in his possession. In the wake of those events, the Attorney General also appointed a special counsel to investigate and determine whether there's any basis to pursue charges in connection with the Biden aspects of this same kind of thing. The Attorney General appointed an individual named Robert Hur, H-U-R. Mr. Hur is the former U.S. attorney in the District of Maryland. He was a part of the Department of Justice under the prior administration. He was appointed by Donald Trump in the administration that preceded this one. And Mr. Hur, as a part of his assignment by the present attorney general, determining whether or not, again, there's any basis for assessing, any basis for finding that there were any violations of the law in connection with Joseph Biden's acquisition, his taking, his maintenance of documents at these locations in Washington, D.C. That matter also continues, even as the matter with respect to the former president, Donald Trump, continues. The big news this past week, in the wake of all of that history of the past several months, is related to the former Vice President Mike Pence. Now, you may recall well that in the wake of the discoveries, this identification of documents in the possession of our former president, Donald Trump, our current president, former Vice President Joseph Biden, Mike Pence, on his own, called upon his attorneys and said, you know what, I would like you to take a look, determine at my home in Indiana whether I have any similar documents that I should not have, that I inadvertently, perhaps like Joe Biden as well, perhaps not like Donald Trump, given recent statements, which we'll get to, if he had inadvertently taken those documents, called upon his own attorneys to do some searching, some investigating. And sure enough, those attorneys did identify a small number of materials in the boxes that were sort of swept up, inadvertently collected at the time that the former vice president, again, this is Mike Pence, left office under the Trump administration, took those boxes, including some of those materials, with him back to his home in Indiana, called upon his attorneys to identify those. They did. They produced those, again, a small number of documents, nowhere near the number of documents identified already, according to most reporting, out of the Mar-a-Lago location, nowhere near the number of documents there. In the same category, if you will, as the Biden investigation, no purposeful, intentional taking of classified documents. But he identifies this as an issue, no indication of obstruction of justice, dissemination of any of these documents to anyone by the former vice president. And sure enough, this past week in a statement, a public statement by the Attorney General of the United States of America. The Department of Justice advised the former Vice President Mike Pence that it is not going to be pursuing any criminal charges related to the discovery of any classified documents at his Indiana home. That in a letter delivered by the Attorney General, by the Department of Justice, to those attorneys who represent the former Vice President in this matter, perhaps other matters as well. No criminal charges, no charges at all related to the discovery of those classified documents at his Indiana home. A significant decision for a couple of reasons. One is, of course, it does close out this singular aspect of this whole document issue. The special counsels, again, Robert Hur, with respect to the present president, and Jack Smith, with respect to the former president, those investigations continue. We do not have any charges, any announcements of an official nature coming out of those investigations. But the Department of Justice in this matter, again, in this matter, there was no special counsel appointed appropriately, no special counsel appointed, principally because until perhaps next week, Mr. Pence has not been an announced candidate for the presidency, fully anticipating that probably in the days just ahead, he may in fact do that, announce his candidacy for the presidency. But this matter did not proceed under the auspices, the oversight or supervision of a special counsel. Instead, attorneys, civil servants of the U.S. Department of Justice reviewing this matter, finding no basis at all to pursue any criminal cases, any charges against our former Vice President, Mike Pence, in this case. It is significant also just as a pure procedural, maybe even a civics matter, to understand what's going on here. We have gotten very used here in America to requesting, requiring, almost even demanding that during the course of investigations, we get information about the status of them. And of course, most prosecutors, including Jack Smith, including Robert Hur, including others out there who have been special counsels, special attorneys appointed by the Department of Justice to investigate these things, have, for the most part, declined to talk about the investigations. That is appropriate. That is the right thing to do. We do not investigate these matters in the public domain, pursue them through a grand jury, pursue them through processes involving interviews, perhaps with the FBI, other agents of the federal government. We do not do this in the public domain, certainly not through the media. And most often, when cases are closed, whether it's by a U.S. attorney, by someone at the Department of Justice, by the Attorney General, others, similarly, it closed without any identification of criminal culpability, no charges being issued by a grand jury, no charges being proposed to a grand jury for indictment. Most often, we do not hear about those either. Why? Because that's appropriate not to be disclosing that. Even the fact of a pendency of an investigation may tend to taint the public view of someone. Criminal cases are closed all the time when there is insufficient evidence to show that there has been a finding of a crime. Sometimes there is a belief, perhaps among the prosecutors, among the investigators, that a crime did happen, but there's simply not sufficient evidence, documentary evidence, witnesses coming forward. And for that reason, too, it's closed. And very often, it turns out that during the course of an investigation, what's an investigation for? It's to investigate, right? It's to find out whether or not a crime was committed. If a crime was not committed, there is no basis to go ahead with charges. And I would offer that that's what's happening in this case. Most often, for cases that are not in the public domain, that do not get the kind of attention that this particular matter and others have gotten by virtue of the fact that Mike Pence is our former vice president, those cases are closed without any announcement by the U.S. Department of Justice, by prosecutors, by agencies. And that's appropriate. We do not, once again, to affect the reputation, the credibility of people out there who may have been under investigation, but whose investigations result in findings of no criminal culpability, or at least at a minimum, a failure to prove enough evidence to support a finding of some criminal involvement. In this case, an exception to that. Why? Because of the public notoriety on this, and there's a public policy inside the Department of Justice that says the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, can, in his or her discretion, announce something that is in the public domain about which Americans rightly have an interest in knowing. knowing legitimacy about a former vice president's conduct in this case would fall inside that exception to the rule. And so an announcement this past week, again, that's not normal, not usual, but this announcement that the former vice president did not engage in any criminal conduct with respect to the documents in his home. That, again, appropriate. Why? Because there is public attention to this matter, public notoriety to it. And the reason for doing that is to ensure the citizenry of our nation that our government is acting competently, that it is attentive to these investigations, and that it will resolve them, hopefully in a fairly expeditious way, but based upon the merits. I would offer that that's exactly what's happened here. An announcement, once again, that that particular matter involving simply the Vice President Pence, not involving the present President Joe Biden, not involving the former President Donald Trump. Those matters still under investigation. But this one now closed, the file done, and the Department of Justice presumably moving on to other things in its broad ambit. And speaking about those very important things, and speaking about the documents case, let's talk about some reporting of just this past week that goes to this issue of intent. As my comments this morning and in other circumstances have reflected, one of the things that the government, by the prosecutors, Department of Justice, assistant U.S. attorneys, U.S. attorneys always have to show, first to a grand jury that has to determine whether or not there is probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed, and second then to a trial jury, sometimes called a petit jury, have to show what in a criminal case, in any criminal case, has to show that there is intent. The defendant has to have had the knowledge, the purpose, the mindset, if you will, sometimes called the scienter, S-C-I-E-N-T-E-R. That's the sort of legal term for it, the mens rea, to use the Latin version of this, the intent to do the crime. And if you don't have the intent to do it, if you simply engage in some negligent act, if you goofed, made a mistake, that may in fact be the focus of a civil action, but it doesn't support criminal prosecution. So one of the things that the government always looks at, I used to look at as an assistant U.S. attorney, as a U.S. attorney at Maine Justice and also here in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, always tried to determine during the course of any investigation, violent crime, white-collar matters, including matters involving documents, what is the intent? What did the defendant, the target of the investigation, intend to do? Was this a mistake of the sort that, again, effectively was announced by the Department of Justice this past week in finding that, yes, Mike Pence had those documents, but did that inadvertently? That was a mistake, all right? Not a criminal matter for prosecution. The question is always whether there is that intent out there to take those documents, to maintain them, perhaps to show them around with a purposeful intent to violate the law. And that, undeniably, is the focus of at least the investigation being pursued by Jack Smith as to the Mar-a-Lago documents. In this past week, once again, some significant news coming out of that investigation. Again, not certain, but probably reliable based upon some of the appropriate reporting being given to us in the public domain. Again, we know Jack Smith, looking at this determination, this question about whether or not Donald Trump maintained, took these documents, used them in some way, and specifically, what was his intent in doing so? Is this a Mike Pence situation where he simply inadvertently took them to Mar-a-Lago? Probably not. Probably not, given the number of documents, the nature of them, the sheer volume of them, other things we have found out. This past week, some additional information coming out through the media with some reliability that federal prosecutors, again, investigating this handling of classified material, actually have a recording of Donald Trump way back in 2021. He at the time was apparently discussing some sensitive military document that he had kept, that he had maintained after leaving the White House, and two people who briefed some of the media on this provided some reliable information about this. In that recording, again, a tape recording of the former president, Mr. Trump apparently suggested that he knew the document was secret and that he had not declassified it, and that for that reason, a great revelation about intent. And, of course, the existence of that recording could undermine Mr. Trump's repeated claim that he had already declassified material or that maybe he didn't even understand the significance of it. When we come back, we're going to talk more about that purpose of intent in investigations and discuss why this particular revelation is so important as this document matter with respect to Mar-a-Lago and the former president continues. Stay with us here on Morning Cannolis for that discussion.
Keep on rolling, Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me? Keep on shining. the enticing smell of fresh baked goods, breads, rolls, pies, cookies, and more. This isn't just a bakery. It's Just Dane's Just Bakery, a training program for people dealing with employment barriers. Learn more and order now for your next get-together at JustDane.org. JustDane.org.
When snack time rolls around, don't settle for the same old, same old. Spice it up with Emmanuel's Mix. Imagine this. Corn rice cereal, pretzels, and mammoth pecans, plus a unique coating that perfectly melts sweet and salty. Emmanuel's Mix Spicy Blend even won first place in the Grand Champion Eats and Treats competition at the Wisconsin State Fair. Now that's tasty. A proud member of Something Special from Wisconsin and served on the sweet level of Fiserv Forum. Emmanuel's Mix. Log on to emmanuelsmix.com. That's emmanuelsmix.com. And get snacking. It's time to have some fun and make a difference, Waukesha County. Attend the 2023 Habitat for Humanity of Waukesha Dream Builders Gala on June 9th at 6 p.m. in the Domenica Park neighborhood. Help celebrate the accomplishments of last year while helping to create, preserve, and promote affordable housing in our area. Enjoy an upscale barbecue, live entertainment, and the chance to make a real difference in the lives of local families. Register now at habitatwaukesha.org/events. That's habitatwaukesha.org/events. Let's build a brighter future together.
Oh, now wait until you pull up to the stop and go light. But when you do, go ahead and save the Civic Media Station to one of your presets. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, and also on the Civic Media app.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
We are back here in Morning Cannolis. Thank you for continuing to join me in our discussion about news related to law, government, and justice in America, chatting in our previous segment about this revelation through the media, probably reliable, that Jack Smith, who is now investigating the former president, his name is Donald Trump, for his acquisition, his taking, his maintenance, perhaps even his using, maybe even his transfer of some of these documents to other people, apparently has a recording way back in 2021, during which the former president at that time he's discussing this military document that he has in his possession. The recording apparently made during a meeting that Donald Trump had in January and July of 2021 with people helping his former chief of staff, that individual, of course, named Mark Meadows. He's writing a memoir of his 10 months in the White House, according to the people who are giving this evidence. The meeting was apparently held at Donald Trump's club in Bedminster, New Jersey, one of his many locations on the East Coast there. And he spends a lot of summer times there. And until now, as I said before, the focus of this investigation has been largely on this material found at Mar-a-Lago, his private club, his residence in Florida, rather than in New Jersey. Here we've got this site in Bedminster, New Jersey, where this conversation apparently happened, according to reporting on this particular conversation, an admission, an acknowledgement by the former president at the time that he's got this document, that it's secret in some way, that it does, in fact, fall into the category of a sensitive military document, that he has it in a way that he should not have it. On the recording, apparently, Donald Trump also was railing against his handpicked chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You may recall his name is General Mark Milley, described in media accounts at the time as having guarded against Donald Trump's striking Iran in the final days of the presidency. Again, a lot of this reporting coming out of this matter relating to the disclosure through the grand jury process, presumably, to Jack Smith of this recording. The recording apparently obtained by the Department of Justice in recent months. Why is it important? Again, it's got to be a key piece in determining whether or not this was inadvertent, whether the acquisition, the maintenance of these documents by the former president was inadvertent, or whether he had the intent to do it. Why is this significant? We don't know exactly what the president said, but if indeed he reveled in the acquisition, the holding, even the brandishing of this document, that goes to his intent, right? He knows he shouldn't have it. He knows the nature of it is a secret military document. And it supports the notion that if indeed Jack Smith and the grand jury that he has convened in Washington, D.C., is looking at this issue of intent under the criminal law to determine whether or not there should be charges against the former president, perhaps others as well, this goes to that issue and certainly supports that conclusion that he knew what he was doing and that he knew that what he was having in his hand, his discussion of it, the sensitive nature of it, all of that goes to his intent, a critical element, again, in determining whether an indictment will be issued and ultimately whether there would be a conviction if indeed indictment different comes out of a grand jury, whether a conviction by a trial or petit jury can also be had. That will be the principal focus of any documents case, regardless of how it is charged, how broadly it is defined, what the scope of that may be. This significant news, again, it's probably a small piece of what Jack Smith has been investigating for a very long time now. But nonetheless, it underscores the importance of the criminal process and probably his necessary focus on now that he knows what the documents were, where they were located, although there is some indication after this report that the special counsel does not, in fact, have the document itself. Perhaps indicating that there are more documents out there, even in the midst of all of that, it reflects upon the status of that investigation, that Jack Smith plainly now looking at this all-important issue of intent. Jack Smith also looking at broadly things related to the 2020 election, right? That's the second major assignment being given to him by the Attorney General to look at things related to this attempt to overthrow the government, if you will, on January 6th of 2020 to undermine the appropriate findings of the Congress by the Vice President, by the Speaker of the House, that in fact Joe Biden won the presidential vote in 2020, opening those electoral votes and finding that Joe Biden didn't have enough electoral votes to take the presidency. The 2020 election also a part of a separate but probably somewhat related investigation also being pursued by Jack Smith inside the Department of Justice. Well, this past week, again, some additional information coming about subpoenas that were issued by the special counsel scrutinizing the dismissal of a person named Christopher Krebs. Christopher Krebs, his name, you may recall him. He was the one who contradicted openly and overtly these baseless claims by the former president, Donald Trump, that the 2020 election was marred by fraud. And in particular, Krebs at the time had said there's no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. And again, that statement made by Mr. Krebs, a part of the government at the time. He was the top cybersecurity official during the 2020 election. And of course, that Krebs assessment that the election was secure was at odds with what Donald Trump was saying about the fraud, as he described it, on the American people. It's plain that Jack Smith is now also seeking information about how White House officials, including the Presidential Personnel Office, approached the Department of Justice, looking at this Krebs matter, looking at other ways in which intent may in fact be established. The investigators, again, probably focusing on Donald Trump's state of mind, his intent, his mens rea, his scienter, as I said, around the firing of Mr. Krebs, which he did. Why did he do that? Why did he get rid of Mr. Krebs, who said these things that, again, were contrary to his position? Well, we probably know why he did that. He was doing it because Krebs was articulating a position that was contrary to what Donald Trump was saying to the world about the legitimacy or illegitimacy of the election at that time. So we know he fired him, that is, Donald Trump fired Krebs to get rid of him, as he has done with other people. But it also goes to the question of intent. If you're firing someone who is indeed articulating a position different from yours about the 2020 election, what does that say about your intent? Well, it says a couple things. It says that plainly this person is telling you there is no fraud here. There's nothing to be seen here, nothing about the election, the electoral college that is subject to disbelief based upon on fraud. And it goes to your this issue about what you knew and what you didn't know. In this case, an attempt after that to fire someone who's articulating something contrary to what your own view about the world may be, contrary to what you probably know in the end is the truth, which is the 2020 election was not, in fact, stolen. Again, this pursuit of matters related to the circumstances under which Krebs was fired is another part, this Christopher Krebs fellow, is another part of this investigation being pursued by the special counsel to determine what was in the former president's mind at the time. Again, another important issue coming out of this investigation this past week, all related to the pursuit of justice. We'll see what happens probably this summer into the fall, whether all of this related to intent, documents, the 2020 election results in a series of federal indictments, federal charges against the former president, perhaps against others as well. That is also going to be the subject, plainly, of our discussion here on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for our next hour as we pursue the pursuit of justice here in America, in the state of Wisconsin, law and government in our state and throughout our nation.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the ABC Civic Media News app.